from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
The premier baseball show in Chicago. Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel.
Here's a little looper, shallow right center, a base hit, a run is going to score. Crossing the plate is Adele, advancing to third, Chanuel on the RBI single by Keston Hira. Calhoun hits a bouncer back to the mound. The throw to second is a bad throw into center field. Pass Dansby Swanson. Racing to third is Ward. Safe at first is Calhoun. It had double play written all over it.
All around the zone was outstanding.
A high fly ball into deep left center field. This one is way out of here. Home run, Joe Adele, solo shot into the left center field bleachers.
So corner at second, two down, two and two on Seiya Suzuki. The delivery. Strike three called and the ball game is over. The Angels win it by a score of 7-0.
This one well hit out to left. Andrew Vaughn got into one. It's going to one-hop the wall. Sheets will score. Misplayed by De La Cruz. White Sox get another. It's 3-0. Well hit, left center. Robert Jr. looking up, and it is gone. A two-run home run for Dane Myers as the Marlins will take their first lead of the game. Two outs in the top of the ninth. Marlins fans making some noise. 1-2. In the air to left center, and it's going to be the left fielder, De La Cruz, who will end this ball game.
It's time for Hit and Run with your host, Matt Spiegel.
Yep, it's me. What up, everybody? Good morning. Happy 7th of July to you. Long overlooked in the pantheon of July holidays. July 7th doesn't really get fireworks. I don't assume there'll be any tonight. There were some last night and the night before. Low brass. I do love when it's July 4th weekend and every night is an excuse to blow off some more steam and some more explosives. Hope everyone is well. Good morning to you on a Sunday. The White Sox are 39 games under 500 and 23 and a half games out of first place. The Cubs are only 8 games under 500, but they're 11 games back. 31 games out of first place for the White Sox, just 23 and a half back in the wild card. There you go. Cubs 11 back in the division, 6 back in the wild card, but it should be noted that even that, 6 back in the wild card, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 teams between the Cubs and the Cardinals, who are in the third wild card spot. So the Cubs have to get by the Diamondbacks, the Mets, the Giants, the Pirates, the Reds, and the Nationals. The calendar still theoretically could cooperate in a dream world of sorts, but they had their shot in June, didn't they, people? They had their shot in June, and we all know it. And yet still, when they win a couple in a row and put up a lot of runs on the 4th and the 5th, you're like, hey, this is fun, okay. And then, well, then all they have to do is go to Baltimore and go to St. Louis. And then you get a game like yesterday and you're like, oh, that's right. That's right. This offense is bad. We'll talk about the bad Cubs offense. We will talk about the Cubs bullpen. We'll talk about a move that apparently is going to be made this morning involving a young Cubs pitcher to come and be in the bullpen. We will talk about the trade deadline. We're going to do a lot of that at 10 o'clock. 10 o'clock, we'll go big picture on the trade deadline for both the Cubs and the White Sox. In the meantime, though, I want to talk with you, and we'll throw open the phone lines at 312-644-6767. I want to hear from you, as we should be in the midst of an exciting year of baseball. And instead, we're where we are. At least as far as the Cubs are concerned, this was supposed to be winning time. And that's why everything feels worse than it does. Worse than it is, I hope. But it feels pretty bad. Supposed to be winning time, and it is very much not winning time. We have a lot of things to discuss. In terms of the White Sox, we'll talk about Garrett Crochet. An off day for him yesterday. Took 45 pitches to get through the fourth inning, did Garrett Crochet, and left after just four innings and 93. He still is an ace and still is someone that I would not trade. Very much on record with that and holding strong. We'll see what happens. I have been checking the White Sox press releases and also Bob Nightingale columns in USA Today, and I don't see anything in there regarding the White Sox or the Cubs. We'll check, though, as the day goes on, of course, and we'll talk with you about all things. There are a lot of good signs in that young White Sox rotation. Jonathan Cannon goes today. I thought Drew Thorpe was really good the other night for his third straight win, his third straight quality start. When he can dictate the count, when he can either get ahead or at least be even and lean on that changeup as much as he did the other night, he's going to be in good shape. You saw what happens with a guy who's changeup heavy when he gets ahead, and that's Tyler Anderson yesterday for the Angels, just dominating the Cubs. Eight innings, 98 pitches in eight innings for Tyler Anderson as the Cubs were swinging away, swinging often. So look, a lot to discuss. Back half of the show is very guest heavy, and I'm looking forward to it. A bunch of different things we're going to do. We'll talk to Chris Kampka, the Sultan of Stat, who is now at Marquee. Haven't spoken to Chris all year long, maybe once, but we'll check in with him, see how it's going over there on the north side as the man departed NBC Sports Chicago a year before NBC Sports Chicago departs their own network. But so Chris Kampka will check in. Cheryl Ray Stout will join us at noon. Really looking forward to talking to Cheryl. She's a wonderful person. Sports reporter at WBEZ. But longtime Chicago sports person, sports reporter, sports commentator, and a one-time member of the White Sox radio booth. So in honor of a very cool thing that Marquee is doing today with the all-women's broadcast, with Beth Mowins and Elise Menaker and Taylor McGregor, I thought we'd talk to Cheryl about the history of women in baseball broadcasting, and I've learned some stuff along the way and look forward to talking to her. And then before that, at 11 o'clock, two of my favorite humans in my music and baseball crossover lives will join us. I have a big gig coming up next Saturday night at Space. I want to talk with you about, and they're involved in that, along with my buddy Len Casper, who, of course, can't come on the show. But we're going to talk about the confluence of baseball and music and if a ball club is like a band and stuff like that. Looking forward to that at 11 o'clock with Gerald Dowd and Liam Davis. Along the way, we will also get into the big Bulls news as we will turn in to pick and roll every once in a while. Or as, what did Mitch call it in email this morning? Dunk and screen?
Dunk and screen.
I think so.
I like that was a good one.
Those are two basketball terms. He's right about that. They don't necessarily go together like hit and run does, or pick and roll, or bump and run, or dump and chase, as we've often done when we morph slightly to another sport. But I liked Mitch's dunk and screen.
It was good.
Yeah.
It was good. There's potential there.
Yeah, I think so. It's also good. Another good friend of mine, musician named Duncan Screen, is that guy.
Okay.
So anyway, DeMar DeRozan is gone. He's a member of the Sacramento Kings. A sign and trade. He goes for 3 years, $75 million. The Bulls get a 27-year-old injury-prone point guard named Chris Duarte, who can play a little bit when he's healthy. And they get 2 second-round picks from the Sacramento Kings. The Spurs were involved, and they got Harrison Barnes, which is fine. The Bulls don't need a 30-something-year-old Harrison Barnes, who's a fine role player, but they're going backwards and defining their direction more than ever What it is an opportunity to think about the 3 years of DeMar DeRozan as a Bull, how great he was, what a classy individual he was and is, and how it was all for very, very little. We had some entertainment with DeMar DeRozan, had some clutch games and some fun, but there was virtually no winning of consequence. A couple of years in the play-in, and some missed opportunities because of health and because of bad superstar play, and I use that in air quotes from Zach LaVine, but along the way, we will have some time to think about DeMar DeRozan's time as a Bull. He has gone to Sacramento in a sign-and-trade, and the Bulls are going backwards by design. And here's hoping they can find a way to get Zach LaVine off this roster as well, because he would just be in the way of what they are going to be trying to do over the next several years. Other Cubs-related minutiae of the moment that we need to deal with before we zoom out big picture. Who starts for Kyle Hendricks next time? Kyle Hendricks now having left that game with back spasms, and apparently that was something that was an issue going into the game. So we'll need to deal with that. With all of the rotation injuries, is it a Drew Smyly start we're looking at? Is it somebody coming up from AAA? And there are certainly some options there. Is it they'll just, you know, buckle through and try to have a bullpen game if they can just do that between now and the All-Star break? How long might Hendricks be gone? We'll have to check it out and see what we can see before first pitch later on today. Craig Counsell will speak pregame, and we'll make sure to be rolling on that and be ready to talk to you about all of that. By the way, this afternoon, the Cubs and Angels conclude their series from Wrigley Field. Pregame coverage is coming up at 12:45 with first pitch at 1:20 on the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network. The Cubs are calling up a right-hander, Hunter Biggie. Hunter Biggie's coming up, and he is going to be part of the 40-man roster today, having gotten healthy at the beginning of June. And since he's been at AAA in this particular last month, he's been really, really good. It's been 11 and two-thirds innings, allowed just one run on a solo homer. He's had a 44% strikeout rate. He still walks a lot of people. He's always walked a lot of people. But he's a 26-year-old righty with high 90s fastball, and they'll give him a shot to play in the major leagues. And I'm all for more roster churn in that bullpen, as it is necessary. Yency Almonte done for the year. Adbert Alzolay, Julian Merriweather, Mark Leiter Jr., all on their way back with various different timelines. Leiter Jr., the earliest of them all, could even be back by the time they get to Baltimore. But Hunter Biggie is here, and we'll see what the roster move is to go along with that today, as he will come up for the Cubs. But let's throw open the phone lines and talk to you about the state of Chicago baseball at 312-644-6767. As we are broadcasting live from the Scores Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. And that is also the number by which you can text the Score. And you can reach us there at 312-644-6767. That's the Score listener line powered by BetQL, BetSmarter, and Beat the Books. Download BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. Look, here's the deal. Incredibly disappointing season. It brings a lot of big picture questions to the fore for the Cubs. You think about who is going to be here next year and beyond, and you wonder when things will change and how things might change. In looking at this first half plus of the year, you find yourself wondering, is it a mirage or are things actually this bad? Are things actually this bad? You got Bellinger not driving the ball. You have Dansby Swanson with his average down to 203, an absolute mess. Christopher Morel remains an intriguing but frustrating conundrum. Ian Happ has been on a terrific hot streak, having a monster July, and even his June was an OPS near 900. So Ian Happ seems to have found it. Seiya Suzuki remains, I think it's top 15 in hard hit rate. He's either 15th or 16th in hard hit rate. had the homer a couple of days ago. But boy, he's maddening in right field. More right field drama for Seiya. You've got Nico Horner, who's taken a step back this year, but shows signs of resuming life as the very solid hitter that he has been. You got Miles Mastroboni with a really good defensive showing and offensive showing behind Justin Steele the other day. But let's face it, yesterday was one of many games during the course of the year where it just looked awful. Just awful. Defensive miscues. Awkwardness on the defensive end. Sloppy play. Non-competitive at bats. Let's call it what it is, man. I mean, 98 pitches through eight innings for Tyler Anderson. Dude swinging and waving at changeups. Falling behind a lot. I wondered this morning, are the Cubs behind in the count as much as it always seems they are behind in the count? Not as often as I thought, as I just sorted by behind in the count. And as a team, they're about middle of the pack. But I will tell you this, when they are behind in the count, they stink. Hitting under 200. Eighth worst. Sox, ninth worst, by the way. And then I thought, it always seems like they're down 0-1. Are they always down 0-1? No, also not as often as I thought. But when they do fall behind 0-1, dead last in batting average and dead last in OPS in the major leagues when they fall behind 0-1. Doesn't it feel like that? Doesn't it feel like as soon as they're behind in the count, you're like, they are toast. And why is that? I find myself looking to human issues there instead of looking to swing plane and looking to lineup construction or really looking into overall approach. I think approach is in there, but I find myself looking at the human issue here and wondering just how much they are pressing and how far down the well they feel as soon as anything goes bad within a count, within a ball game. Just, it feels awful. Does it feel awful to them? They won't cop to it, of course. They're trying to stay positive, trying to do their thing. I talk to Nico Horner every week on the Score. I talk to Craig Counsell once every couple of weeks on the Score. Trying to figure out what is going on with these guys. And I've got a theory that I'll run by you when we come back. Got a theory on that. And you could tell me if I'm crazy or not, but I've got a theory on what it feels like we're watching with this offense, because it's such a subtle thing. Baseball is such a challenging and difficult game to play, and the numbers can tell you a lot, but the difference between the best and the worst is sometimes personal. And I'm wondering how much of that is in there. I want to talk about it with you during the course of the morning. Guest heavy starting at 11. Caller heavy between now and then. We'll do a team of the moment in the next hour as well. Lots to come. Keep it here. Just getting rolling with me, Matt Spiegel, on 670 The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
The doubleheader this weekend obviously makes things complicated. Assad has a, I think, more optimistic that Assad may be able to contribute this weekend, but you know, we're kind of going to need all of them moving forward, at least all the spots plus one. So yeah, we'll have to get a handle on that before his next start.
That's Craig Counsell talking about Kyle Hendricks. Then Kyle Hendricks spoke about it and said he believes he'll be able to start against the Cardinals, which would be big. Because there is that doubleheader that looms on Saturday. Hendricks thinks it's that back tightness, the back spasms that they knew about apparently going in. He thinks that he will be able to go this weekend, and it should give me plenty of time. 3 days off here on the front end should be plenty, and so we'll see what happens. So Kyle wasn't effective and knew it, and knew that it was probably due at least in part to the back, so they went ahead and made that move. And that left the door open for Colton Brewer to come in and do what he did, make an errant throw into center field. Just an ugly day. Ugly day at the ballpark when the Angels, who are 15 games under 500, just beat the crap out of you 7-0. There was nothing offensively for a good, what, 6.5 innings of that game?
A lot of 1-2-3 innings.
Lot of quick innings. Lot of very quick innings. And boy, as physically uncomfortable as I may have ever seen Jed Hoyer in the marquee booth there. In an inning where things got worse and he was forced to talk about the ugly defense in front of him while talking about the draft and the trade deadline and everything with the arms crossed and the body language was, whoo, it was not good. It's true.
It's got to be tough, man.
It sucks, man. It sucks for us. It sucks for the fans. It sucks for him.
Cubs fans are not happy.
No, John Miller's correct. He's correct about that. And so we can certainly talk to them. We'll talk to White Sox fans as well. At Garrett Crochet thoughts I want to get to along with you. But we throw open the phone lines and discuss things with you at 312-644-6767. Matt is in Indiana and is now on Hit and Run. Good morning, Matt.
Morning. Hey, I feel frustrated, you know, as you said, as a Cubs fan. Because you see teams like the Dodgers be good year in and year out, and they're willing to spend the money, and Chicago should be able to spend the money. And then just as a city as a whole, not to get off topic of baseball, but there's some inaction with the Bulls front office not making moves. And just this kind of like stalemate happening that they just let it kind of linger around and don't do much. We want to see more fight. Like you hear Council just kind of slogging through interviews and stuff. There's not like a lot of fire happening right now, and it's just frustrating to see when other teams, including the Brewers now, are, you know, better than us. We just want to see something happen.
This is the worst thing that could have happened to Craig Council in terms of making an impression on Chicago, is this team that he had very little to do with putting together play this bad, because what the firing of David Ross and the big money acquisition of Craig Council said was, we believe we're good enough and just need to be coached up. That's what it said. And now they're clearly not being coached up to be better than they were last year. They're showing themselves to be worse than they were last year. So where does that put you? And then you have what is Craig Council's natural communication style and demeanor, which is deadpan. He is very funny and very dry, but there's not been a lot of good atmosphere to show you that, that's for sure. He's methodical when he talks. He communicates very clearly, in my opinion, but not with a lot of energy and passion or even necessarily polish that we're sort of used to from managers. And it's a bad baseball team makes a manager sound awful. And this moment is really, really bad. What's interesting is the bigger questions of whether Craig is responsible for this or not. I mean, he's had a half a year to get to know this team and try to pull some strings, to get to know the entire organization and try to pull some strings. And remember, they told us that he was coming in on near equal footing with Jed Hoyer. Gonna be thought of as front office, you know, tangential, which is what he was in Milwaukee before he became a manager. It's about the entirety of the organization, the entirety of the system of doing things for the Cubs and adding Council into that. And now you find yourself wondering, is Craig Council going to outlast Jed Hoyer and have more power if Jed Hoyer is not here? How is that going to work? Craig Council's in year one of a 5-year deal. And as the face of the franchise, it's a rough, rough moment. But in a half season with a team he didn't pick and a coaching staff he didn't pick, you got to be realistic about actually what is on him and what is not on him right now. And he's locked and loaded for several more years as well. It's an interesting thing. To counter one thing about the Cubs not spending, it's much more nuanced than that, as I think most fans do know. They're seventh in payroll in all of MLB. It's the way that they have chosen to spend. It's the way that they have chosen to team build that is very much under question. No superstars. No huge money superstars. The biggest money contract they have is Dansby Swanson, which looks to be a problematic one in terms of his offense. Very good defensive shortstop. But leadership that we knew that he wanted to be a part of. I don't know how much that's happening. I genuinely don't know how much that's happening. And the offense being as problematic as it is for him, when you're in year two of a $177 million deal and you're often hitting eighth and striking out as much as he does without the consistent pop. So you've got that money. You've got the Seiya Suzuki money and the Hap money. And Hap and Suzuki are doing okay, having decent seasons. But it's just not enough. It's not enough. And so, to me, it is the lack of spending on a superstar. It's the desire to try and do it a certain way that requires a more nuanced conversation. This is John in Northbrook. You're on Hit and Run this morning with me, Matt Spiegel. What do you say, John?
Hey, how you doing? I was gonna do the correct counsel bit. You know, I have a couple of comments. I listened to your show when you had him on the last time.
Yeah,
it looked like both of you were groping for questions. The questions you asked, I mean, I couldn't believe them. Why doesn't somebody ask him, how much are you responsible for what's going on? You never ask him that question. I'd love to hear the answer. Your softball questions.
Don't put him down. That's all right. Leave him up there, Sean. John, I don't agree that they're softball questions. I believe that what I'm trying to do is not be an a-hole and get good answers from him. And I'm sorry if you don't like him, and that's fine. And you're welcome to that.
I didn't say I didn't like him. I didn't say that.
Well,
I
called him softball. That's pretty judgmental right there.
Well, you say that he's a friend of the station. The guys are getting paid. They're not friends of anybody. I mean, yes, I don't think you ask really hard questions.
He's not a friend of the station. He comes on. He does get paid to come on. That's for sure. I think if you heard in there, in that interview, I did ask him how much of it is on him, and he got a little grumpy. He didn't like it. I didn't maybe ask it in exactly as direct a way as you'd like, John, and I'll take that into account. Do you think he deserves blame?
Do I think he deserves what?
Blame. You think he could be doing more?
Well, when you have a team that's almost dead last in fielding, base running, pitching, and hitting, I don't know who you blame. Okay, he has to take some blame.
Yes, he does.
Actually, it's the fish. The fish stinks from the head up, and it's, in my opinion, it has to do with Tom Ricketts not willing to spend the money that he really should. When what do you call it was here, Theo ran the club. Theo did whatever he wanted to do. He spent money on players that were really, you know, they helped the team. His money that he spent was on the fourth best shortstop because the town was going crazy after the first three was signed. I think Tom Ricketts is really part of the problem. Maybe the whole problem, because I don't think Jed Hoyer is an idiot. I think he can do what he wants to do. That's my opinion.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it. So John thinks that Jed is being held back by Tom. Those dynamics certainly can be interesting. Theo was a man in full and was able to do a lot of the things that he wanted to do, but he had restrictions too. And he tired of some of the restrictions. Look, it's not black and white, but there is some truth to those personal dynamics. Theo left because he didn't want to make some of the decisions that Jed ended up having to make, and that is trading away Bryant, trading away Baez, trading away Rizzo, and, you know, non-tendering Schwarber, trading Yu Darvish and getting $58 million off the books. So Jed was willing and excited to do all those things with this job and kind of rebuild this thing and try to do it in a way that was efficient. And now it is problematically efficient. It is not very bold. There have not been a lot of bold strokes in terms of expenditures. Is that Tom exerting his will onto Jed? Is it a dynamic between Tom and Jed that's different than Tom and Theo? It's certainly fair for you to guess. I don't know. I do know that some of what has gone on problematically is on Craig Counsell, and some of it is on Jed Hoyer. I think most of it is on the team building. I think most of it is on the team building, and most of it is out of the hands of the manager. But on the day-to-day, in terms of the day-to-day and waking up a team and getting them sparked and getting them to change what appears to be a dynamic that as soon as they're down, they get way, way down. Yeah, some of that is certainly on the manager, and some of that is on the composition of the coaching staff. And I wonder a lot about the composition of that coaching staff. I wonder who is the funny guy, who is the wacky guy, you know, when you need that. I wonder who is the a-hole and how that whole personality mix. It's sort of like the Magnificent Seven, a coaching staff. You need a whole bunch of different kinds of personalities and know exactly who's who because different players need different triggers. And I don't know that Counsell has his guys here, has guys that he knows and can call on in certain ways and can counter some of his strengths and some of his weaknesses. I don't know that he has that. So I don't think it is binary in terms of whose fault it is, but I think most of it is on the team building at this point. Let's take another call. This is Brian in Rochester on the Score. Hey, Brian, good morning.
Good morning, Speaks. You brought up non-tendering Kyle Schwarber. Who has a worse glove in the Wrigley Field outfield, Schwarber or Seiya Suzuki? I don't ever want to hear Japanese fundamentals ever again. I'll tell him with the Terry Bores, kiss a sick monkey's wet ass. That guy is terrible.
It's not fundamentals. It's anxiety. It's completely up in his own head, and you can tell. He will make a decent play, but he will not make a routine play. He will. Do you see Clearly. Him? You see him punching his hip the other day after dropping that one, like punching himself in the hip.
How long have we been told that when they come over here, they play the game the right way? You know, we've been preached that our entire lives, and it's just this guy. Wow.
Yeah, he's a human. I think he has learned fundamentals, and he has good fundamentals. He's got a really solid swing, and he's got a strong arm, but it's not an accurate arm. I think they did not a great job of scouting him as a right fielder. You'll see when there's a better outfielder out there, he'll play left. I saw it in the spring when Alexander Canario was up. Suzuki was out there in left and Canario playing right. He's got anxiety out there. It feels a little bit like Trey Mancini at first base a couple years ago. He's got the yips. It is clearly that. And it sucks. Now, there was a decent throw yesterday to get somebody at the plate. Nice tag by Nito. But even that throw, was after a couple of steps.
And Nito had to reach behind him and then come back to the plate.
Yeah, and they were lucky there was that much space. So no, it's to me, it's not about fundamentals. It's the mentality. And it's too bad. It's very, very human. Seems to be a very good dude and with a sense of humor, but just in this incredibly difficult game, in the most difficult league in the world, he gets up in his head sometimes out there, and it scares the hell out of you. As for Schwarber, just I think it's the worst decision of the bunch.
It's just awful, man.
Just awful. That dude is a great teammate. A super solid slugger who hits the hell out of the ball. Yes, he swings and misses a lot, but he hits bombs. And knowing that you've got a guy who hits bombs, and in addition, he has evolved into exactly the kind of leader and teammate that Theo and the scouts dreamed of him being. And he's a great, great dude and a great slugger and should never have left here. And then maybe you don't pay Ian Happ. You know? Yeah, you pay Schwarber, but you're getting full-on bombs in left field out there. Yeah, man. I think that's the worst one of the bunch. We'll continue to take your phone calls at 312-644-6767. Texters getting in on who the mess is on. And we'll get to all of those as well. Your phone calls, your texts, welcome all morning long. And it is, as it is Hit and Run with me, Matt Spiegel, here on 670 The Score.
We're back with more Hit and Run.
Hey, bada, 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 so we, bada. Hey, bada, 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 so we, bada. Kennedy, 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 so we, bada.
On 670 The Score.
You're listening to Hit and Run on 670 The Score. DeMar DeRozan was traded to the Sacramento Kings last night, sign and trade with Sacramento, and it closes the chapter on a really high character three seasons for a truly awesome dude that I'm glad we got to watch and kind of live with as a player and as a person over the last 3 years. It's too bad these teams never amounted to much, but when DeMar DeRozan goes into the Hall of Fame, we'll be able to speak on him as a man and as a player with a lot of confidence and a lot of relevance based on what we have witnessed here in Chicago. We'll mention that along the way, talk to you about baseball along the way. We'll open it up to more White Sox in the next hour. We're caller heavy up until 11, guest heavy after that. But we're talking about the Cubs issues, why they are what they are, where the blame goes. And when you do that right now, you get a very fertile discussion with lots of vehemence and piles of opinions from phone callers like John in Naperville. What's up, John? Welcome in to The Score and Hit and Run.
Morning, Spiegs. Wanted to talk, first of all, this is not counsel's fault that this team can't hit. Base running, you could possibly make a case, but I completely agree with you. This is a front office issue. But I wanted to get your opinion on a theory I have with Bellinger. If you remember when he was signed, Scott Boras talked about his two-strike approach and his contact. And I listened to an interview with Jason Benetti and Scott Harris and talking about the diversity of opinion on front offices as far as like power versus contact. I think he is making a conscious choice to prioritize contact over power. And it's so obvious with his approach, because I think Boras behind the scenes is saying, hey, your value, I can make a case that your value is going to be more going forward if you prioritize more contact and cut down on your strikeouts versus power. Don't worry about home runs.
Hang on, John. I don't think it's Boras related. I think that's Bellinger's. That's the way that Bellinger has resurrected his career. I don't believe that that he can do both. It's very, very rare for a hitter to be able to do both. And we saw Bellinger choose contact last year, and I love the two-strike approach. I love his ability against lefties and with two strikes to do what he does. It just means it's harder to really hit the hell out of the ball and drive it, and you can counter that with velocity. And I think the league figured that out in the back half of last year, and they've continued to figure that out. I don't think Boras wants it. It didn't work for him last year. So I don't think it's Boras related. I think it's a Bellinger choice, and I think it's just unfortunate he can't do both, and he's resurrected his career by resuming the contact skills, which I love and admire, frankly.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. And you touched on it last year too. You were concerned about the high fastball with Bellinger.
Yeah.
And I think LA might have known something, you know, after that shoulder injury, that high velocity up in the zone, he would have a problem with that. And you kind of called that last year. That was something that you were concerned about upon re-signing him.
Yeah, I was. And I was concerned about the big money and locking into a lot of stuff. I was thrilled when they got him back because of the kind of contract that it was and because they didn't have to give him the enormous one. But they should have done more. Look, I can see, I was very optimistic in the offseason and coming into the season, but they didn't do enough. It's just so obvious and so true. And, you know, I could tell you that I wanted J.D. Martinez, but, you know, maybe I should have wanted Matt Chapman as well. And I didn't. I was afraid of that. But look at the deal that Chapman got. They did need more. And I think part of what's going on here, and I told you about the humanity of it, that it's been on my mind, I think these hitters know as a group that they need more. I think they knew they needed more. And they started out well, But then when things started to go poorly, and as Jed Hoyer himself said last week when he talked, 2 weeks became four, which became six, which became eight, and the manager and the coaching staff were not able to get these guys out of a collective funk in terms of the offense, and they clearly have been pressing, and everyone has admitted they were pressing and trying to do too much. They've all been trying to hit home runs, and it's just not freaking happening. Look, in terms of line drive percentage, this team is third to last in line drive percentage. They don't hit line drives. They don't hit a lot of singles or doubles that are based on line drives. They're 18.3%. They're only in front of Oakland and Miami in terms of line drives. In terms of fly ball percentage, they are very high. They're seventh in all of baseball in terms of fly ball percentage. Okay? And then you look at offense as a team and you look at home runs, and they're 23rd. So they're hitting a ton of fly balls, but not a ton of home runs. They don't have home run hitters. Look, there's a story in the news about a really good hitter who was slumping and now is back to his old approach, and it's Marcell Ozuna, okay? Marcell Ozuna, this is yesterday in The Athletic to David O'Brien, talks about how when guys got hurt, when Acuna got hurt and Michael Harris Jr. got hurt, he started to put pressure on himself and say, you know what, I need to hit more home runs. And he was trying to swing for the fences, and it screwed him up. And he said, yeah, I was worried. I was trying to be a hero. But if you see the last month, I left a lot of runners on base with less than two outs. I tried to drive them all in instead of one. You should take one, not try for all of them. When you're trying to get all of them, you get none. And now Ozuna, after a bad month, has decided to go back to just trying to hit the ball hard and hit line drives and let the power be a byproduct of that. Folks, that is baseball. That is offense. That is hitting. You're not going to hit homers if you're trying to hit freaking homers. And I feel like that is a pervasive issue in this whole entire lineup. Owen, you're in Willowbrook, and now you're on Hit and Run on the Score. Good morning, Owen.
That's a great point, Speaking. In fact, Frank Thomas was talking about that the other day on TV, about baseball and guys not driving the ball. But, hey, one of the things I see the problem on both sides of town is the willingness for these teams to admit their mistakes. Let me give you a perfect example. The Houston Astros signed Abreu. The guy struggles. They gave him a shot to work out of it. They said, you know what? This is a bad stock. I'm selling. And they dump him. The Sox and the Cubs, for years, have been unwilling to admit mistakes and cut bait. I mean, the Sox with Benedetti, they paid him a lot of money.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, at some point, these ownerships and these GMs have to realize, you know what? If I make a mistake, I'm moving on.
But it's all sort of relative. Benintendi as this year, and what, two more enormous years for a team that's going nowhere? You don't just cut that dude when he has, you know, mild moments of production. Happy birthday, by the way, Andrew Benintendi. This is the way that you're discussed. But you don't just cut bait on him when you're not going anywhere. For the Cubs, I'll tell you where it makes sense. What you're saying for the Cubs is that they needed help. They needed help, and you could see it 2 months ago, and they didn't go out and do anything. When we get to our team of the moment next hour, it's a team that goes out and does stuff. Whether they should or not, they are freaking aggressive. They got to be aggressive. This is Pat in Cedar Lake as we finish up the hour. More of your phone calls next hour, though, so keep calling it. 312-644-6767. What's up, Pat?
Hey, what's up, Speak? How you doing?
I'm good. We lose you, Pat? Yeah, we lost Pat. It's okay. I'm looking at the Astros here, who were 25-33 and now finds themselves 46-43. So they've gone 21-10. Since the beginning of June, they have gone 21-10, and they have caught some fire. I considered them as a team of the moment because they've had a very good run here. Let's see here. Starting on June 18th, they are 13-3 in their last 16 games, are the Houston Astros. And there is something to be said for a front office telling a team, I know we paid a lot for Jose Abreu, but we just can't. We just can't do it. We can't do it. We can't make you guys do it. We're expecting more from you. We can't just trotting dudes out there. The Astros are a threatening team. And one of the teams that they are threatening is the Seattle Mariners. And that is one of the guys that Jed Hoyer should be targeting. Jerry DePoto is an aggressive freak as a GM. Go take advantage of him. Sad to say that's where you are, but you better be getting ready to take advantage of him if you can. We'll get into that in a little more detail. There was a conversation between Craig Counsell and a venerable baseball scribe about the trade deadline we want to get to. I got to make the case for why Garrett Crochet, even with the difficult day yesterday, is not someone the White Sox should trade either. Guest heavy after 11, but phone call heavy the next hour. 312-644-6767. Cubs and Sox conversation on Hit and Run on the Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
The premier baseball show in Chicago. Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel.
Here's a little looper, shallow right center, a base hit, a run is going to score. Crossing the plate is Adele, advancing to third, Chanuel on the RBI single by Keston Hira. Calhoun hits a bouncer back to the mound. The throw to second is a bad throw into center field. Pass Dansby Swanson. Racing to third is Ward. Safe at first is Calhoun. It had double play written all over it.
All around the zone was outstanding.
A high fly ball hit to deep left center field. This one is way out of here. Home run, Joe Adele, solo shot into the left center field bleachers.
So corner at second, two down, two and two on Seiya Suzuki. The delivery. Strike three called and the ball game is over. The Angels win it by a score of 7-0.
This one well hit out to left. Andrew Vaughn got into one. It's going to one-hop the wall. Sheets will score. Misplayed by De La Cruz. White Sox get another. It's 3-0. Well hit, left center. Robert Jr. looking up, and it is gone. A two-run home run for Dane Myers as the Marlins will take their first lead of the game. Two outs in the top of the ninth. Marlins fans making some noise. 1-2. In the air to left center, and it's going to be the left fielder, De La Cruz, who will end this ball game.
It's time for Hit and Run with your host, Matt Spiegel.
Yep, it's me. What up, everybody? Good morning. Happy 7th of July to you. Long overlooked in the pantheon of July holidays. July 7th doesn't really get fireworks. I don't assume there'll be any tonight. There were some last night and the night before. Low brass. I do love when it's July 4th weekend and every night is an excuse to blow off some more steam and some more explosives. Hope everyone is well. Good morning to you on a Sunday. The White Sox are 39 games under 500 and 23 and a half games out of first place. The Cubs are only 8 games under 500, but they're 11 games back. 31 games out of first place for the White Sox, just 23 and a half back in the wild card. There you go. Cubs 11 back in the division, 6 back in the wild card, but it should be noted that even that, 6 back in the wild card, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 teams between the Cubs and the Cardinals, who are in the third wild card spot. So the Cubs have to get by the Diamondbacks, the Mets, the Giants, the Pirates, the Reds, and the Nationals. the calendar still theoretically could cooperate in a dream world of sorts. But they had their shot in June, didn't they, people? They had their shot in June, and we all know it. And yet still, when they win a couple in a row and put up a lot of runs on the fourth and the fifth, you're like, hey, this is fun, okay. And then, well, then all they have to do is go to Baltimore and go to St. Louis. And then you get a game like yesterday, and you're like, oh, that's right. That's right. This offense is bad. We'll talk about the bad Cubs offense. We will talk about the Cubs bullpen. We'll talk about a move that apparently is going to be made this morning involving a young Cubs pitcher to come and be in the bullpen. We will talk about the trade deadline. We're going to do a lot of that at 10 o'clock. 10 o'clock, we'll go big picture on the trade deadline for both the Cubs and the White Sox. In the meantime, though, I want to talk with you, and we'll throw open the phone lines at 312-644-6767. I want to hear from you. As we should be in the midst of an exciting year of baseball, and instead we're where we are, at least as far as the Cubs are concerned, this was supposed to be winning time, and that's why everything feels worse than it does. Worse than it is, I hope, but it feels pretty bad. Supposed to be winning time, and it is very much not winning time. We have a lot of things to discuss. In terms of the White Sox, we'll talk about Garrett Crochet. An off day for him yesterday. Took 45 pitches to get through the fourth inning, did Garrett Crochet, and left after just four innings and 93. He still is an ace and still is someone that I would not trade. Very much on record with that and holding strong. We'll see what happens. I have been checking the White Sox press releases and also Bob Nightingale columns in USA Today, and I don't see anything in there regarding the White Sox or the Cubs. We'll check, though, as the day goes on, of course, and we'll talk with you about all things. There are a lot of good signs in that young White Sox rotation. Jonathan Cannon goes today. I thought Drew Thorpe was really good the other night for his third straight win. His third straight quality start. When he can dictate the count, when he can either get ahead or at least be even and lean on that changeup as much as he did the other night, he's going to be in good shape. You saw what happens with a guy who's changeup heavy when he gets ahead, and that's Tyler Anderson yesterday for the Angels, just dominating the Cubs. Eight innings, 98 pitches in eight innings. For Tyler Anderson, as the Cubs were swinging away, swinging often. So look, a lot to discuss. Back half of the show is very guest heavy, and I'm looking forward to it. A bunch of different things we're going to do. We'll talk to Chris Kamka, the Sultan of Stat, who is now at Marquee. Haven't spoken to Chris all year long, maybe once, but we'll check in with him, see how it's going over there on the north side as the man departed NBC Sports Chicago a year before NBC Sports Chicago departs their own network. But so Chris Kamka will check in. Cheryl Ray Stout will join us at noon. Really looking forward to talking to Cheryl. She's a wonderful person. Sports reporter at WBEZ, but longtime Chicago sports person, sports reporter, sports commentator, and a one-time member of the White Sox radio booth. So in honor of the very cool thing the Marquee is doing today with the all-women's broadcast, with Beth Mowins and Elise Menaker and Taylor McGregor, I thought we'd talk to Cheryl about the history of women in baseball broadcasting. And I've learned some stuff along the way and look forward to talking to her. And then before that, at 11 o'clock, two of my favorite humans in my music and baseball crossover lives will join us. I have a big gig coming up next Saturday night at Space. I want to talk with you about, and they're involved in that, along with my buddy Len Casper, who, of course, can't come on the show. But we're going to talk about the confluence of baseball and music and if a ball club is like a band and stuff like that. Looking forward to that at 11 o'clock with Gerald Dowd and Liam Davis. Along the way, we will also get into the big Bulls news as we will turn in to pick and roll every once in a while. Or as, what did Mitch call it in email this morning? Dunk and screen?
Dunk and screen.
I think so.
I like that was a good one.
Those are two basketball terms. He's right about that. They don't necessarily go together like hit and run does, or pick and roll or bump and run or dump and chase, as we've often done when we morph slightly to another sport. But I liked Mitch's dunk and screen.
It was good.
Yeah.
It was good. There's, there's potential there.
Yeah, I think so. It's also a good, another good friend of mine, musician named Duncan Screen, is that guy.
Okay.
So anyway, DeMar DeRozan is gone. He's a member of the Sacramento Kings, a sign and trade. He goes for 3 years, $75 million. The Bulls get a 27-year-old injury-prone point guard named Chris Duarte, who can play a little bit when he's healthy. And they get 2 second-round picks from the Sacramento Kings. The Spurs were involved, and they got Harrison Barnes, which is fine. The Bulls don't need a 30-something-year-old Harrison Barnes, who's a fine role player, but they're going backwards and defining their direction more than ever. What it is an opportunity to think about the 3 years of DeMar DeRozan as a Bull, how great he was, what a classy individual he was and is, and how it was all for very, very little. We had some entertainment with DeMar DeRozan, had some clutch games and some fun, but there was virtually no winning of consequence. A couple of years in the play-in and some missed opportunities because of health and because of bad superstar play. And I use that in air quotes from Zach LaVine. But along the way, we will have some time to think about DeMar DeRozan's time as a Bull. He has gone to Sacramento in a sign and trade, and the Bulls are going backwards by design. And here's hoping they can find a way to get Zach LaVine off this roster as well, because he would just be in the way of what they are going to be trying to do over the next several years. Other Cubs-related minutiae of the moment that we need to deal with before we zoom out big picture. Who starts for Kyle Hendricks next time? Kyle Hendricks now having left that game with back spasms, and apparently that was something that was an issue going into the game. So we'll need to deal with that. With all of the rotation injuries, is it a Drew Smyly start we're looking at? Is it somebody coming up from AAA? And there are certainly some options there. Is it they'll just, you know, buckle through and try to have a bullpen game if they can just do that between now and the All-Star break? How long might Hendricks be gone? We'll have to check it out and see what we can see before first pitch later on today. Craig Counsell will speak pregame, and we'll make sure to be rolling on that and be ready to talk to you about all of that. By the way, this afternoon, the Cubs and Angels conclude their series from Wrigley Field. Pre-game coverage is coming up at 12:45 with first pitch at 1:20 on the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network. The Cubs are calling up a right-hander, Hunter Biggie. Hunter Biggie's coming up, and he is going to be part of the 40-man roster today, having gotten healthy at the beginning of June. And since he's been at AAA in this particular last month, he's been really, really good. It's been 11 2/3 innings, allowed just one run on a solo homer. He's had a 44% strikeout rate. He still walks a lot of people. He's always walked a lot of people. But he's a 26-year-old righty with high 90s fastball, and they'll give him a shot to play in the major leagues. And I'm all for more roster churn in that bullpen, as it is necessary. Yency Almonte done for the year. Adbert Alzolay, Julian Merriweather, Mark Leiter Jr., all on their way back with various different timelines. Leiter Jr., the earliest of them all, could even be back by the time they get to Baltimore. But Hunter Biggie is here, and we'll see what the roster move is to go along with that today, as he will come up for the Cubs. But let's throw open the phone lines and talk to you about the state of Chicago baseball at 312-644-6767. As we are broadcasting live from the Scores Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. And that is also the number by which you can text the Score. And you can reach us there at 312-644-6767. That's the Score listener line powered by BetQL, Bet Smarter, and Beat the Books. Download BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. Look, here's the deal. Incredibly disappointing season. It brings a lot of big picture questions to the fore for the Cubs. You think about who is going to be here next year and beyond, and you wonder when things will change and how things might change. In looking at this first half plus of the year, you find yourself wondering, is it a mirage or are things actually this bad? Are things actually this bad? You got Bellinger not driving the ball. You have Dansby Swanson with his average down to 203, an absolute mess. Christopher Morel remains an intriguing but frustrating conundrum. Ian Happ has been on a terrific hot streak, having a monster July, and even his June was an OPS near 900. So Ian Happ seems to have found it. Seiya Suzuki remains, I think it's top 15 in hard hit rate. He's either 15th or 16th in hard hit rate. Had the homer a couple of days ago. But boy, he's maddening in right field. More right field drama for Seiya. You've got Nico Hoerner, who's taken a step back this year, but shows signs of resuming life as the very solid hitter that he has been. You've got Miles Mastroboni with a really good defensive showing and offensive showing behind Justin Steele the other day. But let's face it, yesterday was one of many games during the course of the year where it just looked awful. Just awful. Defensive miscues. Awkwardness on the defensive end. Sloppy play. Non-competitive at bats. Let's call it what it is, man. I mean, 98 pitches through 8 innings for Tyler Anderson. Dude swinging and waving at changeups. Falling behind a lot. I wondered this morning, are the Cubs behind in the count as much as it always seems they are behind in the count? Not as often as I thought, as I just sorted by behind in the count. And as a team, they're about middle of the pack. But I will tell you this, when they are behind in the count, they stink. Hitting under 200. 8th worst. Sox, 9th worst, by the way. And then I thought, it always seems like they're down 0-1. Are they always down 0-1? No, also not as often as I thought. But when they do fall behind 0-1, dead last in batting average and dead last in OPS in the major leagues when they fall behind 0-1. Doesn't it feel like that? Doesn't it feel like as soon as they're behind in the count, you're like, they are toast. And why is that? I find myself looking to human issues there instead of looking to swing plane and looking to lineup construction or really looking into overall approach. I think approach is in there, but I find myself looking at the human issue here and wondering just how much they are pressing and how far down the well they feel as soon as anything goes bad within a count, within a ball game. Just, it feels awful. Does it feel awful to them? They won't cop to it, of course. They're trying to stay positive, trying to do their thing. I talk to Nico Hoerner every week on the score. Talk to Craig Counsell once every couple of weeks on the score. Trying to figure out what is going on with these guys. And I've got a theory that I'll run by you when we come back. Got a theory on that. And you could tell me if I'm crazy or not, but I've got a theory on what it feels like we're watching with this offense because it's such a subtle thing. Baseball is such a challenging and difficult game to play, and the numbers can tell you a lot, but the difference between the best and the worst is sometimes personal. And I'm wondering how much of that is in there. I want to talk about it with you during the course of the morning. Guest heavy starting at 11. Caller heavy between now and then. We'll do a team of the moment in the next hour as well. Lots to come. Keep it here. Just getting rolling with me, Matt Spiegel, on 670 The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel. Sunday mornings on The Score.
The doubleheader this weekend obviously makes things complicated. Assad has a, I think, we're optimistic that Assad may be able to contribute this weekend, but you know, we're kind of going to need all of them moving forward, at least all the spots plus one. So yeah, we'll have to get a handle on that before his next start.
That's Craig Counsell talking about Kyle Hendricks. Then Kyle Hendricks spoke about it and said he believes he'll be able to start against the Cardinals. which would be big. Because there is that doubleheader that looms on Saturday. Hendricks thinks it's that back tightness, the back spasms that they knew about apparently going in. He thinks that he will be able to go this weekend, and it should give me plenty of time. 3 days off here on the front end should be plenty. And so we'll see what happens. So Kyle wasn't effective and knew it, and knew that it was probably due at least in part to the back, so they went ahead and made that move. And that left the door open for Colton Brewer to come in and do what he did, make an errant throw into center field. Just an ugly day. Ugly day at the ballpark when the Angels, who are 15 games under 500, just beat the crap out of you 7-0. There was nothing offensively for a good, what, 6.5 innings of that game?
A lot of 1-2-3 innings.
A lot of quick innings. A lot of very quick innings. And boy, as physically uncomfortable as I may have ever seen Jed Hoyer in the marquee booth there. As in an inning where things got worse and he was forced to talk about the ugly defense in front of him while talking about the draft and the trade deadline and everything with the arms crossed and the body language was, whoo, it was not good. It's true.
It's got to be tough, man.
It sucks, man. It sucks for us. Sucks for the fans. Sucks for him.
Cubs fans are not happy.
No, John Miller's correct. He's correct about that. And so we can certainly talk to them. We'll talk to White Sox fans as well. Garrett Crochet thoughts I want to get to along with you. But we throw open the phone lines and discuss things with you at 312-644-6767. Matt is in Indiana and is now on Hit and Run. Good morning, Matt.
Morning. Hey, I feel frustrated, you know, as you said, as a Cubs fan. Because you see teams like the Dodgers be good year in and year out, and they're willing to spend the money, and Chicago should be able to spend the money. And then just as a city as a whole, not to get off topic of baseball, but there's some inaction with the Bulls front office not making moves. And just this kind of like stalemate happening that they just let it kind of linger around and don't do much. We want to see more fight. Like you hear Council just kind of slogging through interviews and stuff. There's not like a lot of fire happening right now, and it's just frustrating to see when other teams, including the Brewers now, are, you know, better than us. We just want to see something happen.
This is the worst thing that could have happened to Craig Council in terms of making an impression on Chicago, is this team that he had very little to do with putting together play this bad. Because what the firing of David Ross and the big money acquisition of Craig Council said was, we believe we're good enough and just need to be coached up. That's what it said. And now they're clearly not being coached up to be better than they were last year. They're showing themselves to be worse than they were last year. So where does that put you? And then you have what is Craig Council's natural communication style and demeanor, which is deadpan. He is very funny and very dry, but there's not been a lot of good atmosphere to show you that, that's for sure. He's methodical when he talks. He communicates very clearly, in my opinion, but not with a lot of energy and passion or even necessarily polish that we're sort of used to from managers. And it's a bad baseball team makes a manager sound awful. And this moment is really, really bad. What's interesting is the bigger questions of whether Craig is responsible for this or not. I mean, he's had half a year to get to know this team and try to pull some strings, to get to know the entire organization and try to pull some strings. And remember, they told us that he was coming in on near equal footing with Jed Hoyer. Gonna be thought of as front office, you know, tangential, which is what he was in Milwaukee before he became a manager. It's about the entirety of the organization, the entirety of the system of doing things for the Cubs and adding Council into that. And now you find yourself wondering, is Craig Council going to outlast Jed Hoyer and have more power if Jed Hoyer is not here? How is that going to work? Craig Council's in year one of a 5-year deal. And as the face of the franchise, it's a rough, rough moment. But in a half season with a team he didn't pick and a coaching staff he didn't pick, you got to be realistic about actually what is on him and what is not on him right now. And he's locked and loaded for several more years as well. It's an interesting thing. What, to counter one thing about the Cubs not spending, it's much more nuanced than that, as I think most fans do know. They're seventh in payroll in all of MLB. It's the way that they have chosen to spend. It's the way that they have chosen to team build that is very much under question. No superstars. No huge money superstars. The biggest money contract they have is Dansby Swanson, which looks to be a problematic one in terms of his offense. Very good defensive shortstop. But leadership that we knew that he wanted to be a part of, I don't know how much that's happening. I genuinely don't know how much that's happening. And the offense being as problematic as it is for him, when you're in year two of a $177 million deal and you're often hitting eighth and striking out as much as he does without the consistent pop. So you've got that money, you've got the Seiya Suzuki money and the Hap money. And Hap and Suzuki are doing okay, having decent seasons. But it's just not enough. It's not enough. And so, to me, it is the lack of spending on a superstar. It's the desire to try and do it a certain way that requires a more nuanced conversation. This is John in Northbrook. You're on Hit and Run this morning with me, Matt Spiegel. What do you say, John?
Hey, how you doing? I was gonna do the correct counsel bit. You know, I have a couple of comments. I listened to your show when you had him on the last time.
Yeah,
It looked like both of you were groping for questions. The questions you asked, I mean, I couldn't believe them. Why doesn't somebody ask them, how much are you responsible for what's going on? You never ask them that question. I'd love to hear the answer. Your softball questions.
Don't put them down. That's all right. Leave them up there, Sean. John, I don't agree that they are softball questions. I believe that... What I'm trying to do is not be an a-hole and get good answers from him. And I'm sorry if you don't like him, and that's fine. And you're welcome to that.
I didn't say I didn't like him. I didn't say that.
Well,
I
just called him softball. That's pretty judgmental right there.
Well, you say that he's a friend of the station. The guys are getting paid. They're not friends of anybody. I mean, yes. I don't think you ask really hard questions.
He's not a friend of the station. He comes on. He does get paid to come on. That's for sure. I think if you heard in that interview, I did ask him how much of it is on him, and he got a little grumpy. He didn't like it. I didn't maybe ask it in exactly as direct a way as you'd like, John, and I'll take that into account. Do you think he deserves blame?
Do I think he deserves what?
Blame. You think he could be doing more?
Well, when you have a team that's almost dead last in fielding, base running, pitching, and hitting, I don't know who you blame. Okay? He has to take some blame.
Yes, he does.
Actually, it's the fish stinks from the head up. And it's, in my opinion, it has to do with Tom Ricketts not willing to spend the money that he really should. When what do you call it was here, Theo... Theo ran the club. Theo did whatever he wanted to do. He spent money on players that were really, you know, they helped the team. His money that he spent was on the fourth best shortstop because the town was going crazy after the first three was signed. I think Tom Ricketts is really part of the problem. He may be the whole problem because I don't think Jed Hoyer is an idiot. I think he can't do what he wants to do. That's my opinion.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it. So John thinks that Jed is being held back by Tom. Those dynamics certainly can be interesting. Theo was a man in full and was able to do a lot of the things that he wanted to do, but he had restrictions too. And he tired of some of the restrictions. Look, it's not black and white, but there is... There is some truth to those personal dynamics. Theo left because he didn't want to make some of the decisions that Jed ended up having to make, and that is trading away Bryant, trading away Baez, trading away Rizzo, and, you know, non-tendering Schwarber, trading Yu Darvish and getting $58 million off the books. So Jed was willing and excited to do all those things with this job and kind of rebuild this thing and try to do it in a way that was efficient. And now it is problematically efficient. It is not very bold. There have not been a lot of bold strokes in terms of expenditures. Is that Tom exerting his will onto Jed? Is it a dynamic between Tom and Jed that's different than Tom and Theo? It's certainly fair for you to guess. I don't know. I do know that some of what has gone on problematically is on Craig Counsell, and some of it is on Jed Hoyer. I think most of it is on the team building. And most of it is out of the hands of the manager. But on the day-to-day, in terms of the day-to-day and waking up a team and getting them sparked and getting them to change what appears to be a dynamic that as soon as they're down, they get way, way down. Yeah, some of that is certainly on the manager, and some of that is on the composition of the coaching staff. And I wonder a lot about the composition of that coaching staff. I wonder who is the funny guy, who is the wacky guy, you know, when you need that. I wonder who is the a-hole and how that whole personality mix. It's sort of like the Magnificent Seven of coaching staff. You need a whole bunch of different kinds of personalities and know exactly who's who, because different players need different triggers. And I don't know that Counsell has his guys here, has guys that he knows and can call on in certain ways and can counter some of his strengths and some of his weaknesses. I don't know that he has that. So I don't think it is binary in terms of whose fault it is, but I think most of it is on the team building at this point. Let's take another call. This is Brian in Rochester on the score. Hey, Brian, good morning.
Good morning, Spiegs. You brought up non-tendering Kyle Schwarber. Who has a worse glove in the Wrigley Field outfield, Schwarber or Seiha Suzuki? I don't ever want to hear Japanese fundamentals ever again. I'll tell him with the Terry Boers, kiss a sick monkey's wet ass. That guy is terrible.
It's not fundamentals. It's anxiety. It's completely up in his own head, and you can tell. He will make a decent play, but he will not make a routine play. You see him punching his hip the other day after dropping that one? Like punching himself in the hip.
How long have we been told that when they come over here, they play the game the right way? You know, we've been preached that our entire lives, and it's just this guy. Wow.
Yeah, he's a human. I think he has learned fundamentals, and he has good fundamentals. He's got a really solid swing, and he's got a strong arm, but it's not an accurate arm. I think they did not a great job of scouting him as a right fielder. You'll see when there's a better outfielder out there, he'll play left. I saw it in the spring when Alexander Canario was up. Suzuki was out there in left and Canario playing right. He's got anxiety out there. It feels a little bit like Trey Mancini at first base a couple years ago. He's got the yips. It is clearly that. And it sucks. Now, there was a decent throw yesterday to get somebody at the plate. Nice tag by Nito. But even that throw, was after a couple of steps.
And Nito had to reach behind him and then come back to the plate.
Yeah, they were lucky there was that much space. So no, it's to me, it's not about fundamentals. It's the mentality. And it's too bad. It's very, very human. Seems to be a very good dude, and with a sense of humor, but just in this incredibly difficult game, in the most difficult league in the world, he gets up in his head sometimes out there, and it scares the hell out of you. As for Schwarber, just I think it's the worst decision of the bunch.
Just awful, man.
Just awful. That dude is a great teammate. A super solid slugger who hits the hell out of the ball. Yes, he swings and misses a lot, but he hits bombs. And knowing that you've got a guy who hits bombs, and in addition, he has evolved into exactly the kind of leader and teammate that Theo and and the scouts dreamed of him being. And he is, he's a great, great dude and a great slugger and should never have left here. And then maybe you don't pay Ian Happ. You know? Yeah, you pay Schwarber, but you're getting full on bombs in left field out there. Yeah, man. I think that's the worst one of the bunch. We'll continue to take your phone calls at 312-644-6767. Texters getting in on who the mess is on. And we'll get to all of those as well. Your phone calls, your texts, welcome all morning long. And it is, as it is, Hit and Run with me, Matt Spiegel, here on 670 The Score.
We're back with more Hit and Run.
Hey, bada, 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 so we bada.
On 670 The Score.
You're listening to Hit and Run on 670 The Score. DeMar DeRozan was traded to the Sacramento Kings last night. Sign and trade with Sacramento. And it closes the chapter on a really high character three seasons for a truly awesome dude that I'm glad we got to watch and kind of live with as a player and as a person over the last 3 years. It's too bad these teams never amounted to much, but when DeMar DeRozan goes into the Hall of Fame, we'll be able to speak on him as a man and as a player with a lot of confidence and a lot of relevance based on what we have witnessed here in Chicago. We'll mention that along the way, talk to you about baseball along the way. We'll open it up to more White Sox in the next hour. We're caller heavy up until 11, guest heavy after that. But we're talking about the Cubs issues, why they are what they are, where the blame goes. And when you do that right now, you get a very fertile discussion with lots of vehemence and piles of opinions from phone callers like John in Naperville. What's up, John? Welcome in to The Score and Hit and Run.
Morning, Spieg. Wanted to talk, first of all, this is not council's fault that this team can't hit. Base running, you could possibly make a case, but I completely agree with you. This is a front office issue. But I wanted to get your opinion on a theory I have with Bellinger. If you remember when he was signed, Scott Boras talked about his two-strike approach and his contact. And I listened to that interview with Jason Benetti and Scott Harris and talking about the diversity of opinion on front offices as far as a power versus contact. I think he is making a conscious choice to prioritize contact over power. And it's so obvious with his approach, because I think Boras behind the scenes is saying, hey, your value, I can make a case that your value is going to be more going forward if you prioritize more contact and cut down on your strikeouts versus power. Don't worry about home runs.
I don't think that's what it feels like. Hang on, John. I don't think it's Boras related. I think that's Bellinger's. That's the way that Bellinger has resurrected his career. I don't believe that that he can do both. It's very, very rare for a hitter to be able to do both. And we saw Bellinger choose contact last year, and I love the two-strike approach. I love his ability against lefties and with two strikes to do what he does. It just means it's harder to really hit the hell out of the ball and drive it, and you can counter that with velocity. And I think the league figured that out in the back half of last year, and they've continued to figure that out. I don't think Boras wants it. It didn't work for him last year. So I don't think it's Boras related. I think it's a Bellinger choice, and I think that's it's just unfortunate he can't do both. And he's resurrected his career by resuming the contact skills, which I love and admire, frankly.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. And you touched on it last year too. You were concerned about the high fastball with Bellinger, and I think LA might have known something, you know, after that shoulder injury, that high velocity up in the zone, he would have a problem with that. And you kind of called that last year. That was something that you were concerned about upon re-signing him.
Yeah, I was. And I was concerned about the big money and locking into a lot of stuff. I was thrilled when they got him back because of the kind of contract that it was and because they didn't have to give him the enormous one. But they should have done more. Look, and I can see, look, I was very optimistic in the offseason and coming into the season, but they didn't do enough. It's just so obvious and so true. And, you know, I could tell you that I wanted J.D. Martinez, but, you know, maybe I should have wanted Matt Chapman as well. And I didn't. I was afraid of that. But look at the deal that Chapman got. They did need more. And I think part of what's going on here, and I told you about the humanity of it, that it's been on my mind. I think these hitters know as a group that they need more. I think they knew they needed more. And they started out well, but then when things started to go poorly, and as Jed Hoyer himself said last week when he talked, 2 weeks became four, which became six, which became eight, and the manager and the coaching staff were not able to get these guys out of a collective funk in terms of the offense, and they clearly have been pressing, and everyone has admitted they were pressing and trying to do too much. They've all been trying to hit home runs, and it's just not freaking happening. Look, in terms of line drive percentage, this team is third to last in line drive percentage. They don't hit line drives. They don't hit a lot of singles or doubles that are based on line drives. They're 18.3%. They're only in front of Oakland and Miami in terms of line drives. In terms of fly ball percentage, they are very high. They're seventh in all of baseball in terms of fly ball percentage. Okay? And then you look at offense as a team, and you look at home runs, and they're 23rd. So they're hitting a ton of fly balls, but not a ton of home runs. They don't have home run hitters. Look, there's a story in the news about a really good hitter who was slumping and now is back to his old approach, and it's Marcell Ozuna, okay? Marcell Ozuna, this is yesterday in The Athletic to David O'Brien, talks about how when guys got hurt, when Acuna got hurt and Michael Harris Jr. got hurt, he started to put pressure on himself and say, you know what, I need to hit more home runs. And he was trying to swing for the fences, and it screwed him up. He said, yeah, I was worried. I was trying to be a hero. But if you see the last month, I left a lot of runners on base with less than two outs. I tried to drive them all in instead of one. You should take one, not try for all of them. When you're trying to get all of them, you get none. And now Ozuna, after a bad month, has decided to go back to just trying to hit the ball hard and hit line drives and let the power be a byproduct of that. Folks, that is baseball. That is offense. That is hitting. You're not going to hit homers if you're trying to hit freaking homers. And I feel like that is a pervasive issue in this whole entire lineup. Owen, you're in Willowbrook, and now you're on Hit and Run on the Score. Good morning, Owen.
That's a great point, Speaking. In fact, Frank Thomas was talking about that the other day on TV, about baseball and guys not driving the ball. But, hey, one of the things I see the problem on both sides of town is the willingness for these teams to admit their mistakes. Let me give you a perfect example. The Houston Astros signed Abreu. The guy struggles. They gave him a shot to work out of it. They said, you know what? This is a bad stock. I'm selling. And they dump him. The Sox and the Cubs, for years, have been unwilling to admit mistakes and cut bait. I mean, the Sox with Benedetti, yeah. They paid him a lot of money.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, at some point, these ownerships and these GMs have to realize, you know what? If I make a mistake, I'm moving on.
But it's all sort of relative. Dude, Benintendi as this year and what, two more enormous years for a team that's going nowhere. You don't just cut that dude when he has, you know, mild moments of production. Happy birthday, by the way, Andrew Benintendi. This is the way that you're discussed. But you don't just cut bait on him when you're not going anywhere. For the Cubs, I'll tell you where it makes sense. What you're saying for the Cubs is that. They needed help. They needed help. And you could see it 2 months ago. And they didn't go out and do anything. When we get to our team of the moment next hour, it's a team that goes out and does stuff. Whether they should or not, They are freaking aggressive. They got to be aggressive. This is Pat in Cedar Lake as we finish up the hour. More of your phone calls next hour, though, so keep calling at 312-644-6767. What's up, Pat?
Hey, what's up, Speak? How you doing?
I'm good. We lose you, Pat? Yeah, we lost Pat. It's okay. I'm looking at the Astros here, who were 25-33 and now finds themselves 46-43. So they've gone 21-10. Since the beginning of June, they have gone 21-10, and they have caught some fire. I considered them as a team of the moment because they've had a very good run here. Let's see here. Starting on June 18th, they are 13-3 in their last 16 games, are the Houston Astros. And there is something to be said for a front office telling a team, I know we paid a lot for Jose Abreu, but we just can't. We just can't do it. We can't do it. We can't make you guys do it. We're expecting more from you. We can't just trotting dudes out there. The Astros are a threatening team. And one of the teams that they are threatening is the Seattle Mariners. And that is one of the guys that Jed Hoyer should be targeting. Jerry DePoto is an aggressive freak as a GM. Go take advantage of him. Sad to say that's where you are, but you better be getting ready to take advantage of him if you can. We'll get into that in a little more detail. There was a conversation between Craig Counsell and a venerable baseball scribe about the trade deadline we want to get to. I got to make the case for why Garrett Crochet, even with the difficult day yesterday, is not someone the White Sox should trade either. Guest heavy after 11, but phone call heavy the next hour. 312-644-6767. Cubs and Sox conversation on Hit and Run on the Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.